It's The Adventures of Indiana Jim number 45 for December 10th, 2010.
And now, coming to you not exactly live from
the cliffs of insanity,
a man who needs no introduction.
Don't open that! It's an alien planet! Is there air? You don't know!
That intrepid arch-geekologist, Indiana Jim.
You have chosen wise.
Don't tell me you've never heard of me.
I'll explain, and I'll use small words so that you'll be sure to understand, you warthog-faced buffoon.
Let me put it this way. Have you ever heard of Plato? Aristotle? Socrates?
Yes.
Morons.
You, boy, are arrogant, hot-tempered, entirely too bold.
I like that. Reminds me of me.
Maybe you're the plucky comic relief. Did you ever think about that?
I don't believe I've ever seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, stupidity.
Why are you listening to this fella? May I imagine? He's wearing a costume, not a uniform.
I have entertained in all the courts of Europe and speak a ready wit in their every tongue.
I told you I was famous.
Hello and welcome back to The Adventures of Indiana Jim. I am your host, titled thusly, Indiana Jim. Welcome to episode 45. It's been a while in coming, and I will say this, that my friend Jim Ryan and I have not gotten back together to record more for you yet, but we will soon. I hope you've enjoyed the content you've been getting. This episode will be a little bit shorter than what you have received in recent days, but hopefully it'll be worth your while. Let's get the contact info out of the way in case you are interested in dialing me up right now. Voicemail line is 760-705-INDY. That's 760-705-4639. Yes, I had to look at the phone to get that. Call that voicemail line, email podcast at indianajim.net. You can find me on Facebook, and that's facebook.com/IndianaJim, I believe. And you can also find me on Twitter at Indiana Jim. And as always, you can go to the blog website, podcast.indianajim.net, and comment on the post for this episode and whatever show notes I decide to put up there, which I don't tend to do a lot of. I don't tend to put a lot of show notes in there. That's just me. That's just my way of doing things. I wanted to give you a little bit of the feedback that I've received. Some of it is, well, quite old. April, May, June. Yeah. So it goes back a little ways. And one of the comments I wanted to give you was from Maria Golson. She sent me a message on Facebook. And this was after I had spoken with Scott Sigler about some of the ways that he connects with his audience via, you know, community practices, social media, and whatnot. And here's what she had to say. I've been listening to Scott Sigler's podcast since about midway through Earthcore, and I agree with what you and he both have said about why he's successful at getting people to buy his novels. I never forget about Scott. I signed up at his website. If I accidentally delete his podcast feed, I occasionally get emails from the website, or I hear about him on another podcast, so I go and reestablish his feed. In addition, he seems very personable. If I email him, which I do rarely, he emails me back. After years and years of podcasts from him, when he published a book and felt like I had to buy one. I didn't need it, so I gave it to my mom, and now she's a fan, although not a podcast listener. Anyway, thanks for the commentary. And again, we go back to being a regular person and not turning into a podlebrity. And, you know, sometimes that is a definite easily done thing. It's an easy thing to do, to bank on one's celebrity status more than one ought to. And it's a testament to Scott's ability to connect with fans that keep them coming back and get them in the stores buying the books. Let's move to the next thing. This is actually all about coffee. And you recall me talking about coffee way, way, way back when in May. And this is kind of interesting. This person is was a barista, certified coffee master from Starbucks. And David writes in, "Hey Jim, I've been a longtime listener and fan, especially of Codename Starkeeper, which kept all four of my boys quiet and content for most of a very long drive from Kansas City to Mississippi last year." That is really cool. Man, that's awesome. And this isn't the first time I've read this. I, of course, read it a long time ago. And I've apparently been very bad about feedback, and I'm so, so sorry. Life has been... Well, life. I had just started a new job at that point, so my ability to get in and make podcasts was few and far between. "The fine folks over at Geek Radio Daily turned me on to you a while back. Cool. And you introduced me to Scott Sigler." Now, that is odd. That is just odd. Me introducing someone else to Scott Sigler, I figured it would have been, you know, Scott first. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. We're talking about coffee. First, there's nothing wrong with drinking the same coffee every day. I spent 5 years as a Starbucks barista, and I'm a certified coffee master, which means I can wave my hand and say, this isn't the coffee you're looking for. And I took breakfast blend home almost every week, but I wanted to make a few coffee suggestions. If you ever feel like a safe change, you might give Guatemala Antigua or Organic Shade Grown Mexico a shot. Like breakfast blend, these are both Latin American coffee, so the flavor profile is pretty similar. Second item, air, heat, and time are the three enemies of coffee. When you break down and buy a new pot, look for one with a thermal carafe and no burner. That's exactly what I did. I made sure that I got one with the thermal carafe and no burner. In fact, yesterday I had my coffee in the morning, right? At 8:30, 9 o'clock-ish, had my first cup. I went out to a job interview. Went and picked up my son from school for a doctor's appointment. Went to the doctor. Brought him home. It's 1:30 in the afternoon. Poured that coffee into my thermal cup. The stainless steel lined ones. You know the ones I mean. And it was still warm. It was still not lukewarm. It was drinkable warm. That was pretty sweet. It's from Mr. Coffee. Bought it at Target for about $80. Coffee on a warming plate just cooks, and the second cup you drink is never good as the first. The thermal carafe also doesn't let air in and keeps the pot fresher. Starbucks only sells brewers with thermal carafes, but you can find them at Target, yeah, and most other department stores these days, or online for a few bucks less. You still have the time factor, but unless you can freeze it in carbonite, that's inescapable, and who really wants frozen coffee? He says, a French press is another possibility. You make a couple cups at a time. The flavor is pretty intense, but they work for a lot of coffee lovers. Next time you're in Starbucks and have some time, order one. Costs about the same as a latte, but they make you a small pot. It's quite a bit stouter than coffee from a standard brewer. He says, God bless and thanks for all you do. I'm looking forward to the Wars book, even if it isn't a graphic novel. I'm looking forward to the Wars book, too. Trust me. I'm looking forward to it. Let's see. So that is it from David. Thank you so much, David. My dad has a French press. I'm not really interested in uber strong coffee, but you know, that's just me. And now we have some real feedback from Ted Wade. Ted's a regular listener, or at least he used to be. Maybe he got tired of me not answering feedback, but. I hope not. I hope you're still out there, Ted. And what I have for you, as I hit my windscreen there, yeah, I don't know if you heard that. What I have for you is feedback from Ted Wade.
Hello, Indiana Jim. This is Ted Wade of Two-Fisted Tales of Magic. I just listened to adventure number 40. And I have to say that that was definitely some really good food for thought. In my opinion, good sci-fi and fantasy need to have a strong philosophy going behind the story that is what ultimately drives the plot going along. Some examples is the original Matrix with its contemplations about reality. The Day the Earth Stood Still, the original one, or even The Lord of the Rings with its contemplations of the corrupting influence of raw power. For a long time, I had written off Star Wars because, well, I just couldn't get a grip on the philosophy behind it. but the article you wrote really drove it home and pointed out what I was missing. And from where I'm seeing it, it's coming from the dichotomy between reason and emotion. The Jedi being calm, deliberate, and rational, while the Sith embraced their emotions and drew power from it. Looking at things in this new light, the Jedi Order in the prequel trilogy, the Jedi Order behaved almost like they had taken a hard line against emotion and connection during the Sith War and never relaxed the attitude. Perhaps the Sith had taken several victories or had developed several spies or turncoats during that war by playing on Jedi's emotions and connections. And that perhaps is where I think ultimately the idea of bringing balance back to the Force, that the Jedi Order never went back to emotion as a good aspect of the Force. Pardon me if I bring a little heresy here, but really it was almost as if they were trying to emulate Vulcans. Sorry about that.
Oh.
You guys can go to my website and spam me all to death for that one. But anyway, the Jedi were, yes, cold in how they used their people and essentially what they wanted their people to be. Even going back to the original trilogy, watching that scene in A New Hope where Obi-Wan is giving Luke the edited tale of Anakin, and keeping in mind what you knew from watching Return of the Jedi, I personally always had trouble after that not yelling at the screen, "You lying bastard!" So, but then kudos to Sir Alec Guinness for getting through those scenes and still having Obi-Wan be somewhat sympathetic. I mean, really, that whole "a certain point of view" nonsense to this day reminds me of Bill Clinton's "depends on what you mean by is." Going on to Yoda, good Lord, what a cold bastard. Originally, he was willing to stick by his guns and say, nope, it's too old. But he compromised because, well, Luke was all there was. And then, even as Luke is blasting off to go rescue his friends at Cloud City, Yoda was already making plans for a fallback position. Granted, it was kind of, I'm sure the line was originally Lucas's ham-fisted attempt at foreshadowing future revelations. But if you just leave it as, you know, the character saying it, no, there is another. Just, yeah. I think Yoda really takes a hit when you consider the philosophy of all this. Anyway, that's my uninformed 2 cents worth, having primarily stuck with the movie trilogies and not having gotten too deep into the expanded universe. However, this does get me curious, and perhaps I'll make some time and actually finish playing The Force Unleashed. I hear that's supposedly canon. So, thanks for hearing me out, Jim, and keep up the good work.
Thanks, Ted. I appreciate your comments, and especially supposedly canon. Supposedly is a good word to be throwing around right now, especially with the Force Unleashed books and Vader's secret apprentice, and he was supposedly helping get the rebellion started, and I don't know what to think of that. Okay, fine, whatever. Then you take the Clone Wars cartoon, and oh boy, does it screw with canon. But I appreciate your comments. As far as, you know, lying to Luke, they had to. Just looking at it from the outside, there's no way Luke goes forward knowing he's his father. And when he does find out that Vader is his father, spoiler alert, by the way, when he does find out that Darth Vader is his father, he takes it in the right spirit. And you see Luke go, well, I can't kill my own father. And Ben's like, well, then the Emperor has already won. You were our last hope. It's like, we had to keep this from you if you are going to defeat him. And again, maybe this comes down to the Jedi emotional attachment issue. And sometimes this happens in real life. When you approach a situation from the emotion of the situation, you tend to make rash decisions. And I think that's more where they're coming from than anything. I'd be nice to Yoda. I wouldn't hold it against the character of Yoda. George didn't know what he was thinking when he wrote it. Essentially, it's one of those, ooh, it would be really cool and cryptic if Yoda says this. It was really kind of a throwaway line to make people wonder. And he will even admit it wasn't until he started writing Return of the Jedi that the topic came up that he figured, okay, Leia is his sister. And there we go. And that's where it all comes from. And it wasn't, now we go back and look at the canon through hindsight. And, well, of course, he was talking about Leia. But originally he wasn't. I wouldn't say he was cold and unfeeling, a backup plan or whatever. But he knew that the only one who could possibly confront Vader if Luke wasn't successful would be his twin sister, because she would be as strong in the Force as he was. And he doesn't say, we have another plan. He says, there is another, Ben says, that boy was our last hope. And Yoda says, no, there's another hope is the operative word. And you got to think, after Vader killed off all the Jedi, and there's only two left, and the dark side is ruling the galaxy with an iron fist, it's probably pretty important to take down that iron fist. And I think that's all I will say about that. Next, I will please your ears. Thank you, Ted, by the way, for that. I will please your ears with feedback from Steve Dorning of the Heavy Metal Cowboy series. Let's see what he has to say.
Hello, Indiana Jim. This is Stephen Dorning. I'm an author and one of your listeners now, apparently, since I have become addicted to podcasts. I just recently found yours.
One of us.
I got to tell you, you had me at your intro. Okay? I loved every one of the clips of every one of the movies that you've got clips of in your intro, and it just, when I first started listening to it, I was like, wow, like this, really
thanks.
Like this.
Thank
so
you.
So even if you get a new promo, don't change your intro. No. That's just awesome. Just wanted to stop by and give you some feedback and tell you you're doing an awesome job, and we'll talk to you later. Keep up the good work.
Well, thanks, Steve. That was short and sweet and absolutely welcome. So thank you so much for doing that. And I appreciate you listening. I appreciate that there's anyone still listening, because I'm assaulting podcasting's sacred cows left and right. Shut up, cow. Okay, well, that word carries a little more meaning than I wish to convey. So without any further ado, we're going to take a break. And when I come back, I'm going to talk about something that really kind of irked me today, really bugged me. So I want you to hear what I have to say and then give me your opinion. Tell me what you think. And that's how discussions are had. And send in more feedback, because I need more feedback on this particular issue. I want you to call in and tell me what you think. Again, voicemail number 760-705-INDY, podcast at indianajim.net. And we'll be back after this.
Jason Hawks of the United Earth Central Corps. I've encountered an unidentified spacecraft that has refused to answer all attempts to communicate. It has reacted in a hostile manner and launched several combat fighters to engage me. My ship is damaged and I'm not going to make it, so I've done a memory scan and embedded it in this transmission. Please. I'm not sure how I got here or even where here is.
Can you boost the signal?
I woke up in the wreckage of a crashed shuttle. Is anyone receiving this? Can anyone out there hear me?
The relay satellite has been destroyed. My signal's too weak.
If you can hear this, you've got to warn Earth. We are being invaded.
There's no hope of warning Earth in time.
The aliens that shot down my shuttlecraft plan to take over UCC territory.
They surrounded the station.
I'm stranded on this primitive backwater planet and trapped in some kind of experimental biosuit. We are being attacked by some
There's
sort of...
There's too many of them.
Some sort of shape-changing alien beings. If you are receiving this... Please, relay the warning to Earth.
Stars of the Connery by S.P. Dorning. Ask for it at your local bookstore or order it on Amazon.com or Barnes & Noble today.
Here's what I want to ask you about. I know a lot of my audience, and myself, we're aspiring writers. We want to get paid to write. And we want to go to the professionals. We listen to podcasts, we listen to interviews, we read books from people who have done it, who are successful, who know what they're talking about. Now, if you want to be a career novelist, write for a living. Whose example do you want to follow? Well, you know, I like to look at the most successful authors, right? I mean, that's what we do. We look to the best in our field. If you want to compose film music, you look at the example set by John Williams or Jerry Goldsmith, Hans Zimmer even, to a smaller degree, but yeah, Hans Zimmer. If you want to paint, you look at Monet, Picasso, a lot of these famous painters, composers, you know, Beethoven, Mozart. You want to write political thrillers, you look at Tom Clancy, okay? You figure out what he did, why he's so successful at it, and then you improve on it, or you try to. You try to emulate the factors for success. Let's look at fantasy. You want to write fantasy? Look at George R. R. Martin. Look at Robert Jordan. Look at Terry Goodkind. Look at Terry Brooks. Look at the big names out there. Look at even popular ones. Take Stephen Donaldson, who writes things to great critical acclaim. Neil Gaiman. Now, I know a lot of people will say, well, you can never be as smart as Neil Gaiman. I wouldn't know. I don't know enough about the guy. From what I understand, everything around Neil Gaiman is all about trying to feel smart. I hear people throw the word genius around with Neil Gaiman, whatever. Okay, that's fine, you know. I think he's a guy who sounds smarter than he really is. Of course, a lot of it's maybe he just talks so far over people's heads that we just automatically assume, man, that guy's a genius. I don't know, whatever. It doesn't matter. Point is, you look at who's making it in the industry, and you work off of their example, kind of. You know, you don't just plug and play a template. You take what you can learn from those people. Now, if I want to learn about writing, that's who I want to hear from. And this is something that has benefited me in the age of podcasting, to listen to things like The Dragon Page, to Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing, now Writing Excuses, you know, where you've got a big-time writer, Brandon Sanderson, and a couple others, helping you think through some of these issues. And now here's where I have a problem. I have a problem anyway with a lot of these people, so-called experts out there, that want to sell you something. Now, I totally understand wanting to make a living from what you do. I totally understand learning a craft and wanting to share that with others. And I'm not even saying that Holly Lyle doesn't know what she's talking about, because that's who I'm talking about right now. But why do I want to pay a bunch of money for a writing course from someone who's a mid-lister? From someone who, you know, it's like going to a university and taking a writing course. If I want to be a novelist, taking a writing course from someone who's never published a novel. I think this came from Stackpole. You know, now, Holly Lyle has a lot of publishing credits. That's great. And she's not really well known. Now, does that make her course invalid? No. But I have a lot of other resources that I've learned plenty from. But there's one thing that you can't shave time off of, and that's experience writing. Now, there's a lot of things I'm sure that her course, what is the course titled? I don't even know what it's called. How to Think Sideways: Career Cyber Survival School for Writers. I'm sure that what it does is takes a lot of the best advice that you would have heard, condenses it, presents it in a very good methodical educational format, where it's presented in, you know, according to educational theory, okay, so that you can process it the way educators have learned that people process things. And I'm not even going to say that it's not of value. So what am I really saying? Well, I've got to weigh my options here. Now, when you look at the page, it starts with gigantic red print at the top, different color text, you know, highlight bullet points with highlighted portions and italics and large print, and each subsection with large bold print. And it looks like every single online scam that I've ever seen. To me, it's lazy internet marketing, number one. That bugs me. Again, saying nothing for the value of what you learn, just the presentation of the of what you get. I even understand the whole concept of bare bones web development, you know, not putting too much into your website. She can't afford to. She doesn't make that much probably with her books. I'm kidding. I'm so kidding. But it just rubs me the wrong way. And a good friend of mine whose opinion I value, said that he thinks he skipped several years of trial and error by taking the course. And I've learned from 2005 when I started listening to the Dragon Page. I mean, in 5 years, I've learned quite a few things that probably I could have learned sooner without the trial and error. But see, the only trial and error I've had is in the writing. I've never, you know, I haven't had problems getting stuff published because I just haven't submitted anything. I'm just not ready to. If you feel like you're ready to start submitting stuff, then I don't know why you would need a writing course, because you probably got it all figured out, right? No. I'm confused. And really, I would like a dialogue on this. But, you know, I all this stuff and the testimonials, not a one name that you would recognize. Not a one. In fact, you know, even amongst a lot of sci-fi fantasy readers, Holly Lyle is not a big name that comes up. Now, she's written a lot of stuff, and she's had several novels that have been, you know, translated into other languages, and, you know, she's making a nice living, I would probably think, and I think it would not be too much of a leap to say she probably makes a decent living by selling her writing teaching products. This isn't about Holly Lyle. This is about what Holly Lyle does for you and what you do for yourself. You can pay that money and take that writing course and consider it invaluable. But until you've actually sold something, what good is it for you? I'd like to see testimonials from somebody who is out there publishing novels with a good-sized mainstream publisher making a living like Holly Lyle, who did so because they took Holly Lyle's writing course. You find them and you tell me where they are. That's what I want to know. I don't want to know how good Holly Lyle is or how good she is at her living. I want to know the people that have learned from her who are making a living. Where are they? Because you know what? Most of the people, I'll guarantee you, without even going to look at it, I don't even have to. Most of the people in her private community, let's see, that's one of the blah, 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 blah. And this is really an issue with the marketing. I don't really have an issue with her. I really don't. In fact, I've even liked the things that she has said that I've heard from her in interviews and things. And see, of course, I'm scrolling down until I find this list of benefits that you actually get, and I just scrolled right on past it. And see, this is part of the problem with the marketing presentation. Oh, boy. Oh, here we go. Here we go. The course is only part of what you'll receive. Each week, or every other week, you'll receive a lesson and you'll receive a separate technique, blah, blah, blah. You'll also get a monthly movie to get you started with each month's topic. Oh, how nice. You'll receive copies of some of my manuscripts in multiple drafts so you can discover how a pro writes and revises. Okay. On really wrecked ones, I'll walk you through the places where I went wrong in a big way and what I did to fix the errors. That's cool. You'll have access to a private work group. You'll have the student bookstore where you get deep discounts on what? Other writing courses. Now, I'm not saying it's a scam either. Again, not trying to bash the person, not trying to bash the product, because I haven't had experience with the product, but here's my ironclad guarantee. Go into that full access private writing community, and if you find one professional author in there making a good living, I will slap myself in the face or give you a prize, one of the two. let's just say I would be extremely surprised. And I guarantee you, the people that spend money on these writing courses, you know, it says don't get this course if you're looking for a magic bullet. But you know what? 95% of the people out there are looking for the magic bullet. They think plunking down some cash on an online writing course is going to make them a writer, and it's just not. Speaking from experience, as a person with little self-discipline, that the best way to become a professional writer is by practicing self-discipline. It's by writing. The only way you can learn how to write effectively, Holly Lyle can tell you all day long how to write. Brandon Sanderson can tell you all day long how to write. Mer Lafferty can tell you all day long how to write. She doesn't do a lot of that. Anybody out there is my point. Anybody out there can tell you how to write. Tom Clancy, George Martin, Robert Jordan, well, he's dead now, but any of these popular writers out there, Mike Stagpole will tell you all kinds of information you want to know about how to write. They can tell you everything that you need to know, but until your brain figures out how to produce it for yourself, you've gotten nowhere. Now, again, the value is probably in the condensing of the information, all the best advice you would have ever received in a single, easy-to-take online course. It costs you $35. And I think, is there a monthly subscription? I'm not sure here. Let me look down this way. The course costs either $47 per month for 6 months or $25 per month for 12 months. $25 a year. For stuff just kind of that I've picked up here and there for free. Now, here's the thing. You can find all this information, and really, it's not rocket science. It's really not. The important part is learning how to write. You can learn from anybody for free the best practices for revising all and writing and plotting and all of this stuff. All it takes is a little ingenuity on your part and everyone's friend Google. It's really not that hard. Now, will it save you some time? Maybe. But why are we trying to cut corners when we're trying to be professionals? I mean, look at the professionals. You tell me what writing courses they took. Now, some of them took courses in college, but what they will tell you is you're learning from someone who hasn't sold a novel or maybe sold one in your creative writing courses out there. The authors that have time to develop writing courses are the ones who have chosen what to do with their time rather than write. Now, I'm not saying she doesn't write. I'm asking how much more. And, you know, it's like being a music major. The very best musicians become professional musicians. The very best composers become professional composers. The ones that aren't the very best become music teachers. Trust me, been there. Not as a music teacher, but I have been a music major. When you're an English major, the very, very best writers get published. The ones not so very, very best teach. Now, granted, you got writing symposiums. You have Clarion Workshop. I guarantee you, you go to Clarion one time and you will get three times the value that you'll get out of one of these courses. Trust me, more pro writers come out of Clarion than any author's online writing course. Brandon Sanderson and some friends of his have a big thing they're doing now. It seems like an annual thing now in Salt Lake City. Very, very good-looking writing seminar. Guarantee you there will be some pro writers out of there that make good livings. Viable Paradise is really good at cranking out some professionals there. Mer Lafferty went one year, and she gave glowing testimony to Viable Paradise. It's a audition thing to get in. It's a very steep application process. But here's what I want to say to you. Find the very best authors out there who are making the living that you want to make and figure out what they're doing and how they're doing it. Most of these authors out there, you can find interviews with them where they will tell you everything you need to know. And sure, go out and get as many opinions as you can. But the minute you plunk down money, you are forfeiting your own self-discipline there. You're forfeiting the work. And again, like my friend said, you know, 7 years of trial and error he saved by going through that course. Yeah, I guarantee you, it'll teach you a lot probably. And, you know, I know there's a lot of things that I've learned since I really decided that I wanted to do this. Was it 99? I don't know. 98, it was sort of still a hobby. And I eventually figured out, hey, I can actually do this. I've certainly learned more in the writing process than I've ever learned about anything else. As far as submitting, you know, best practices, submissions, revisions, this kind of thing, I've just done research on my own. And it didn't cost me money. And, you know, that's just my opinion. But it just suddenly irked me to see that some people I know have plunked down money to do this, and they're still in the same boat I am. They've written some more. And I guarantee you it's because they're more disciplined in their writing time than I am. You know, I look at guys out there that I know, like, take the Flying Island Press guys. Scott Roche, Zach Ricks, Jeff Height. These guys have written a whole lot more than I have, and they're more short story guys than they are novelists anyway, or at least it seems to me. I don't understand people who can crank out short stories, because I just don't. My brain doesn't process plots on that small a level. I get bored reading through short stories. It's like, okay, great, thanks. Some of the serial stories are different, like Conan the Barbarian, you know, some where it's connected, it's okay, but I don't really think in short story format. But then again, you have audio dramas like Starkeeper, and that's sort of a short story plot, but it's, you know, but it's written differently. It's script format. So I don't know, it's weird for me. I just don't do short stories very well. But these guys are cranking stuff out. And why? Because they're writing. Is their stuff any good? I don't know. I've never really actually listened to much of what they've done. no offense to those guys being out there. I know you're out there. Not any offense to you guys. But anyway. I just don't like the idea of this thing which looks like so much amateur marketing. And again, the testimonials are from people you've never heard of. And it just, you know, says to me, not worth the money. And again, on the other hand, I look at these professional rider workshops out there, well worth the money. Hey, look, go to your local convention, go to the riders panels, and in 3 days of con activity, which I don't know if it'll cost you as much, it depends on how far away you are, 3 days of con activity will give you the exact same knowledge. It'll give you a chance to network with other writers and editors who are professionals, not your fellow classmates, as it were, both professional and your current con classmates. You will get more out of that, I think, as long as you process it properly and look at it as an educational opportunity. You'll get more out of that, personally, I think. I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy. Maybe I'm nuts. Maybe I'm completely off my rocker. Maybe I'm absolutely wrong. Maybe I'm being too harsh. I don't know. Unless you tell me. Yeah, you knew that was coming, didn't you? So, let's go here. The Adventures of Indiana Jim. Call the voicemail line. 760-705-INDY. That would be 760-705. 4639. 760-705-4639 or 760-705-INDY. You can email podcast@indianajim.net. Skype idea Indiana_Jim_. I'm on Facebook, Twitter @IndianaJim. Go to the website podcast.indianajim.net. And give me your thoughts on this because I'm curious. So consider this my rant for the month. me and Jim hope to get back together and record some more stuff for you. So thanks a lot for stopping by. And I've stapled my fedora to my head, and I'm riding off into the sunset.